With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Everybody, welcome to this divisional round edition of A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Gardy, joined today by Denny Carter. We're going to recap Monday evening's Rams-Cardinals blowout, take a spin through this week's news, conduct a post-mortem of zero RB in 2021. Denny has it written into his contract that doesn't exist, that we have zero RB every single offseason show. So we're going to get that going today.
It's true.
We will ever so briefly... take an initial look at this weekend's division round games ahead of our full preview on Thursday with myself, Denny, Matt Straub, and John Daigle. Yeah, I don't have a prompt. Do you have any thoughts on anything today? Anything in the world bothering you? A horrible take on anything today?
Oh, man. I have some takes. Whether they're appropriate for the show, I don't know. But if we're going to stick to football, one thing, something you tweeted last night, Aaron Donald choked a guy again.
He did. He likes to choke people, I've noticed.
And the refs seemed perfectly fine with it. I don't understand what's going on there.
That was strange. I don't understand. It seemed like he instigated the whole thing, too. Like, at first, I thought maybe Humphreys was, like, pulling his face mask. I was like, no, actually, Aaron Donald was pulling his face mask. And then he started choking him.
So... I don't know, earlier this season, I don't know how many, a month ago, 6 months ago, who's to say, Aaron Donald legitimately tried to rip out the throat of a Green Bay Packers offensive lineman.
That's MacGruber's move, the throat rip.
Yeah, I don't mean that he had his hand around the neck, he had his hand around the throat, was trying to pull like Dalton in Roadhouse.
Interesting. Yeah, we don't want anyone's tracheas being removed during the NFL. That would maybe put a damper on the NFL postseason. Lost a trachea.
Let's review what his tactics. So Aaron Donald got mad. He tried to choke the guy. He tried to rake his eyes out. He tried to what was the other thing? There was a third thing he tried to do. It was all a little too much. And I felt like his teammates were like, get this Cardinals guy away from Aaron, because we're afraid.
But yeah, I guess he should have been ejected. There's no doubt. But I guess I also appreciate the NFL understanding that I'm here to watch the playoffs and I don't want Aaron Donald ejected from this game. But it was quite surprising that he were not ejected. And you have to feel like if he was like a rotational run stuffer, he would have been immediately ejected.
Absolutely.
But, yeah. You don't get away with that if you're, Yaz Chattingsworth, and
right,
you're only in on 33% of the snaps to stop the run.
Yeah. If you were activated from the practice squad 24 hours before the game, you're out of there. Furthermore, you're cut the next day.
Yeah. So that would have been the kind of thing where Sean McVay like ran on the field to shove him out of there, that kind
that's
of thing
right,
when they
that's
do
right.
that. But yeah. Aaron Donald, everyone's just kind of like, please, sir, calm down. And the refs are like, please, sir, like only two more strikes and you might have to get you ejected from this ball game. And
yes.
that was definitely strange. Aaron Donald may want to take a chill pill.
It needs to come down a lot.
It seems like people are always attacking him. Like, in real life,
seems like he gets like attacked a lot in like parking lots and like clubs. Like people are always want like a piece of Aaron Donald. So maybe he's just tired of it.
That's what came to mind last night. The validity of the stories.
I know. I was thinking about the same thing. Like, well, maybe Aaron Donald is actually just instigating some stuff.
I mean, you see him on the field and then you're, I don't know. It's
Is that people always want to come at the king, Aaron Donald, and then he's sick of it and he might start.
I guess.
But yeah, that was interesting. Interesting referee. A lot of interesting refereeing all weekend long from our NFL official. It's a tough job, but they're probably actually way better than they used to be, but boy, they could sure be a lot better still.
You know, while we're on the ref thing, you tweeted on Saturday that the Tyler Boyd touchdown absolutely should not have counted.
Yeah, and like I sort of agree with like the talking point that it didn't affect the play, like whatever. But I mean, like the rule is very clear; it should not have counted. And I was also just mystified there the whole time because it seemed like even Tyler Boyd gave up on the play.
Yes,
like even he gave up on the play. And that was just egregious, and it should have not counted. And maybe it didn't like really affect the game. Maybe it was going to be a touchdown regardless. But like the rules, like black, there's no like catch rule, like murkiness there. It was like the rule is very clear that if the whistle blows, the play is dead and replayed. And they just didn't do that. And the touch, if Tyler Boyd clearly thought the play did not count. Maybe he didn't think that when he jumped. By the time he came down the end zone, though, he was like, all right, darn, touchdown doesn't count. Play is dead. And he didn't celebrate at all. You know, rather unusual to not celebrate a postseason touchdown. He didn't think it counted.
The body language gave it away. Not just from him, but from the defenders as well. I don't think the defenders would have stopped the play, but still, I mean, you could see their shoulders slump. They were done with the play because the whistle blew. I mean, what you're trying to do, Pat, is you're trying to take away the only good play the Bengals had in that.
So that's a good. I mean, but yeah, I understand the talking point that they were going to stop it anyway, but the rule could not be more clear. It was very black and white matter. What was also black and white, Denny, is that the Cardinals looked like an expansion team in Los Angeles on Monday evening. They entered halftime with almost literally 0 yards. And a 21-0 deficit. It didn't get much better after the break, a 34-11 loss. And the question I just kept coming back to, not just this game, but really down the stretch, the Cardinals was like, what was the plan exactly? Yeah. Like, what is the offensive design for this team? There's no coherent approach or philosophy. And man, it's because DeAndre Hopkins got hurt and so many other people were banged down the stretch that it was just impossible to get like a normal weekly game plan install, but like that doesn't hold up. Like you're in the NFL, you got to figure out scheming around injuries is part of the game. And the Cardinals just seem like they're running around with chickens with their heads cut off basically. And we can't fully absolve Kyler Murray. He looked very rattled, but the Cliff Kingsbury era has run its course. Has it not, Denny?
It seems so. You know, when you're down 3 scores in the first half and you're throwing consecutive wide receiver screens, bubble screens, you know, there's something deeply wrong with that, especially when you have Kyler Murray as your quarterback, as you have, you know, you have capable pass catchers in Christian Kirk and Rondell Moore, you know, Antoine Wesley, who is Cliff Kingsbury's favorite guy in the world. You have all these, you know, you have potential weapons and you're running this offense that's designed what to gain, 5, 6, 7 yards at a time. Like if the bubble screen works, it just doesn't make that horizontal raid nonsense is just the worst, especially when you get down. How can you come back with that?
You can't. Like that is the thing. Anytime the Cardinals have gotten down, really the entirety of the Cliff Kingsbury era, they go so horizontal. It's like, seriously, that's like the only word to describe it is horizontal. And not that they're not kind of horizontal when like the good times are rolling, like that's like his fallback though. Like when he doesn't know what to do, he just makes the offense basically like it's Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers, and everything is within 2 yards of the line of scrimmage, either behind it or ahead of it. And that just can't, like, where were the designed runs for Kyler Murray last night? Like where were like the actual sensible like pressure valve release targets? Like maybe just target Zach Ertz 2 or 3 times, 7 or 8 yards down the field, like get some like true layups. This just totally incoherent and bad. Like you said, like it was like the classic DFS thing. Like, what do you win when you win?
Yeah.
Like, okay, like, what do you even get? Like, you completed this 2-yard pass. I mean, congratulations. Like, what game are you playing here? And Kyler was, you know, so rattled. Like, yeah. Kyler seemed to be like genuinely rattled. Like, why in the world is Kyler Murray like the Bills did with Josh Allen? Like, get him out there and run. Like, it's the playoffs. I know you don't want him to get hurt. You want him to take unnecessary hits. But, like, they had to do something to interrupt the flow. And he just had no answers. And it was just so hard to watch.
I think you could tell the level of Murray's, you know, rattledness, discombobulation on short throws.
Absolutely.
There were several first half just easy dump offs where he's throwing it, you know, throwing it like a rifle at the guy's head. No touch, like, just seemingly out of sorts in every possible way. And it culminates with that, you know, pick six, which may be the worst decision I've ever seen in football.
I don't know if it was quite as bad as the Carson Wentz one, but the problem is that it was in the same family. And, like, you never want to be in the same family of any of the hilarious Carson Wentz. Does that? I could see the argument that it was worse than the Carson Wentz pick six from earlier. See, to Google that, by the way, if you haven't seen that. Because, I mean, what was that, like, an underhand flip from Kyler? Like, he rolled it out of his hand. Like, he was doing – like a Will Ferrell, like, dumb impression of, like, I'm a horrible quarterback. And he just, underhand flipped the ball.
It really does a lot to boost my argument that quarterbacks and running backs, to an extent, do too much to avoid a safety. Just take the safety.
I know.
You know, it's not like, you, I don't know if you've heard, it's 2 points. 2 points. So, you know, you take the safety instead of making a back-breaking decision. You just take the safety. You don't need to do all this stuff. You know, we see quarterbacks throw the ball away and get called for grounding, and then, you know, get the safety anyway. Just honestly, sometimes just take the safety and move on. And Murray was not willing to do that. He was willing to do literally anything to avoid it.
Yeah, it would have still been a 2-score game with the safety. The pick six though made it 21-0. And it was funny. I was texting with my friend before that. I was like, I mean, I said, I know for a fact they're about to get called for holding and a safety in the end zone. Like, things were trending so bad. I'm like, there's going to be a safety. It's going to be a clear and obvious hold. I was not prepared for the worst pick six of the entire season, non-Carson Wentz.
Right. The whole thing felt catastrophic from the start. Like, the game had a feel of, will the Cardinals be able to survive this onslaught? Which honestly, I didn't expect coming into the game, considering how well the Cardinals played the Rams this season. But wow.
In the first game, they played the Rams very poorly in their second game, I will say. But they had a very questionable season. Where, like, they demolished the Rams the first time they played, like you said. And the Rams kind of returned the favor in the second game. But expect any playoff team to look. I mean, I think, like, kind of from the opening whistle, the question was, are the Cardinals going to score? Like, that's how bad it looked. Or just, like, no confidence, no game plan, just nothing for anything. That was the Cardinals last night. Nothing for anything.
You know, just as far as, you know, measuring Cliff Kingsbury's offense down the stretch, overall on the season, the Cardinals had the 9th highest expected points added per play on offense over the final 4 weeks of the regular season. That dropped to 16th, which is a pretty significant fall and way below where they were for the season's first month, which was in elite territory. So the productivity of that offense just fell off a cliff I didn't even mean that as a joke, but it did fell off a cliff in the season's final month.
Well, and it coincided with DeAndre Hopkins' injury. But the weird thing is that the first time he was injured, it didn't. Like, they weathered his first, like, pretty lengthy injury absence, like, almost flawlessly. I was like, wow. Like, they just, like, not that I thought, like, DeAndre Hopkins didn't mean anything to the Cardinals' offense or anything like that, but I was, like, surprised by how smooth they kept the operation during DeAndre's first absence. And the second one, it was just, like, it was noticeable the second time around. And where everything just started going south, you know, Antoine Wesley's getting 9 targets per game. But we had still seen nothing like that performance we got on Monday night. And yeah, Cliff, I just, Kyler Murray, like clearly he's like near, like Kyler Murray is like almost there of like true weekly elite status, like top tier franchise quarterback. But like, it seems like he just needs a little, he needs one final push from a different, like, I think he's accomplished all he can accomplish in this offense.
Oh yeah.
And that he needs a new voice. He needs someone else to put him over the top. Again, not to absolve Kyler Murray, but like he's just so close. And you can just tell, like, with the right pairing, not even just like the perfect coach pairing, just a better coach pairing, he will be ready to just go fully nuclear and finally be like at his top one percentile outcome. But it's just, it's not Cliff, man. It's not Cliff. Well,
this would prove my dad wrong. My dad last night called me to tell me that this Tyler kid's too short. Can't do it. So we're hoping he's not.
He's on the short side. He is on the short. And sometimes it seems like when he's rattled, yeah, like almost he like is like running like out of the pocket so he can like see over the lineman. But I think he's been proven that he is tall, indeed tall.
So I have a question about Kyler Murray, just while we're on this topic. And this is going to sound dumb, but I'm going to say it anyway. Is Kyler Murray fast, or does he just move his legs really quickly?
I don't know. He does get caught. He does get like mowed down from behind more often than you'd think. He might have some like Russell Wilson going on there, where Russell Wilson actually never really looked fast. Kyler does look very fast. But I mean, he's had some injuries. Maybe he's already losing a gear, because I've noticed that too.
His feet move very fast. I have to give that to him. You know, I've never seen feet move that quickly, except for maybe Keith Byers, the old Eagles and Dolphins running back from the 90s. But I see linebackers and defensive linemen chase him down on a regular basis, and I don't get it.
He does get chased. He gets mowed down. Yeah, that's how I would describe it. And there was one play in particular last night. I'm like, all right, this would be like a 40-yard run. And he just got run down. And that was weird. I think we're probably thinking of the same play, I think. Or it's like, how did he not get free of the defense there?
You watch Lamar Jackson, who's like effortlessly outruns everybody on the field all the time. Josh Allen has those long strides where it doesn't even look like he's trying, but somehow he's outrunning everybody. Even Justin Herbert, you know, just like is deceptively like he just takes off and he's like a rocket. But Kyler Murray gets out of the pocket and
he looks very fast and then he gets tackled.
This is not just from last night. I often think watching Kyler Murray, oh my goodness, this is going to be a 60-yard touchdown, and it's a 4-yard gain.
Yes, and by the way, the ultimate deceptive speed is Patrick Mahomes. Like, this guy does not look fast, and yet he somehow never gets tackled ever. And
it is the most unexplainable phenomenon in football today. The fact that Patrick Mahomes runs like a dad and is never caught.
He's just so crafty. I tweeted recently, like, he would never get tagged out in a baseball rundown. Like, no. There's just something, everything he does, you know, the way he throws the ball, the way he plays quarterback is so unorthodox and crafty. And he's the same way. It helps to have a Howard serve an arm, of course, but he's the same way as a runner. Yeah. Like, it doesn't make sense, but you can't catch him, basically.
So Mahomes doesn't even look particularly athletic. He wears that huge thing around his middle section. For my dog, but yeah, the huge padding around his middle section. Like, he looks like Ben Roethlisberger at times, but he takes off and no one catches him. I wanted to make a comparison though about a crafty baseball runner. Would you say, and maybe I'm off base here, you're the baseball knower, would you say that Mahomes has some Derek Jeter in him?
No, because he's unlike Jeter, he actually does still have like some, not that Jeter was a bad athlete, but Patrick Mahomes is like, in baseball scouting parlance, Pat Mahomes has some 80s in him. 80 is the highest you can get on the baseball scout. Like, Patrick Mahomes has an 80 arm. Derek Jeter wasn't like 80 in anything.
Okay.
Mahomes has got some 80s. So yeah, Derek Jeter is not a great comparison, Denny. I'm sorry, you're canceled. On the other, for the Cardinals, not on the other side of the ball yet. Beyond Kyler and Cliff, the Cardinals have just a ton of questions on offense this offseason. Christian Kirk, AJ Green, Chase Edmonds, James Conner, and Zach Ertz are all bound for free agency. You know, this is DeAndre Hopkins is about to turn 30 years old. Who amongst that group, Danny, do you think they should prioritize re-signing?
I mean, if Kingsbury is around, and I would guess that he will be, then I think that Ertz is very likely to come back. He seems to be a perfect fit for what Kingsbury wants to do, which is check down 6 yards at a time and move the ball that way. And that's Zach Ertz to a T, and always has been, you know. And, you know, Zach Ertz's game hasn't changed at all from when he was 24 years old. Like, he's always done the same thing. And that means that a guy like that can have longevity, like we saw with Jason Witten. I'm talking more in terms of statistical output and fantasy performance. So I would be really surprised if they let him get away.
Yeah, I actually don't think they should either, because Cliff is so weird. Cliff, I don't know if you even remember this talking point. He had a narrative when he entered the NFL of that he didn't target tight ends. They had a year at Texas Tech, an entire season, where I think they had like 3 tight end targets the entire year. It's like, this was a meme. Like, Cliff just doesn't target tight ends. And then his first year, I don't even remember who their tight ends were. They had like no good tight ends, so they weren't targeting them. But it's become a progressively bigger part of the offense. And like, Zach Ertz just felt like a perfect fit this year. And Zach Ertz also just looked physically rejuvenated. I think tight end is such a physical position that in 2020, when Zach Ertz was looking kind of done, he must have just clearly been playing through like 2 or 3 injuries, because kind of like Gronk this year, like, he looked like rejuvenated on his physical form from last season. It looked like a guy that has several seasons left. And like you said, like Jason Witten, even if he like loses a bit of it, he's just so reliable over the middle of the field with his hands. And I actually do think that they should prioritize re-signing Zach Ertz. And I think they should let AJ Green walk. I mean, AJ Green, he averaged like 15 yards per catch this year. He actually had like his most productive downfield season in quite a long. He also stayed healthy for the first time since like George Bush was president. It had been a while for AJ Green, but like, it just seemed like replacement. It seemed more like the position than the player, basically. I mean, maybe I'm being disrespectful to AJ Green, but like, he was an upgrade on what they had in like their number 2 or 3 receiver spot these past years, where they didn't have much receiver depth. But like, when I was AJ Green, I was like, wow, like, you know, this position might actually work in this offense, like kind of like the deep shot specialist, but it just needs to be someone with more left in the tank than AJ Green. And I think, yeah, they should. I don't know what they should do with Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk is going to be a fascinating free agency case. I just feel like I have no grip on him at all as a player.
I am stunned that he didn't step up more and wasn't more of a factor down the stretch. I really, really was bullish on him when Hopkins went on IR. I guess I either underestimated the way the team thinks of him, or just his place in the pecking order. Maybe he doesn't really fit the offense. I know that they kind of rotated him like pure slot guy, pure out boundary guy. Like, they've moved him around the offense to try to, try to get him involved in some way, but it really never worked out. I mean, as a player, I like him a lot. I think I'll continue to be bullish on him if he gets out of Arizona. If he stays there, I don't think there's any reason to think that he's gonna, you know, become like a wide receiver, like a solid wide receiver too there.
He's just the kind of player, he always leaves you wanting a little more, and like, not in a good way. And it's pretty clear at this point, like, he's probably never going to be anyone's number one wide receiver.
No.
And it's hard to really be that excited about wherever he ends up in fantasy. It's going to be as a number 2 or 3. Basically, I think like Christian Kirk's dynasty moment has kind of come and gone. I mean, I'm not breaking news to anybody, but it doesn't seem like there's another gear basically in Christian Kirk's game. And I don't think he's someone like, he goes somewhere else like, oh, he's going to be unlocked, like that kind of thing. Like, he just needs to get away from me, getting away from Cliff Kingsbury. I mean, that, I'm sure that will be nice for some people, but like, Christian Kirk I think it's safe to say at this point, after 4 years, he's not the kind of player, like, it's just going to take the right offense to like find this final gear. And I think he's just kind of a classic, like, he is what he is player. At this
point. Yeah. Another thing about Kirk is that with opposing defenses shifting coverage and leaning coverage toward DeAndre Hopkins over the last 2 years in Arizona, Christian Kirk still really was not a thing, like a real weekly thing for fantasy. And if that's the case, like, I that's what I thought in 2020, you know, well, with teams absolutely dead focused on taking away new Hopkins, Kirk's going to have to be something. And it didn't happen. So I'm with you. We are Walter Cronkite breaking news that Christian Kirk's dynasty value is not good. going forward.
Not, yeah, he's going to be 26 too. He's not going to be particularly young. I mean, he's not like super old, but he wasn't like a young guy into the NFL or anything. So it'll be kind of on the older side for someone getting their second contract. And yeah, it just doesn't, it seems like he's a good NFL player, and that's just what he's going to be, is a good NFL player. There's not another step for him to take in his career. Yeah, on the other side of the ball last night, I mean, the big takeaway, how could it not be Cam Akers, who went from popping his Achilles tendon in late July to looking like one of the best players in the field Monday evening. I mean, I just couldn't help but again think what I thought last season with Cam Akers. Like, this guy is basically running like Adrian Peterson, just like with so much explosion, like so much ferocity. Like, he seems like bigger than like other guys run like that, like Chris Carson. It just seems like he's like so powerful and so angry. Just a very, very, very dangerous runner. And with Sony Michel headed to free agency, Denny, are we all the way back in on Cam Akers for 2022?
So Cam Akers was one sideline reception, long touchdown sideline reception away from instantly becoming a top five fantasy pick next year. And that's you know, against the Cardinals, like if he had had his head up and he connects with Stafford there and goes for a 70 yard touchdown, that's it. Like, he's locked in. And I think that's going to happen anyway. I think it's clear how the team wants to use him.
They love him, as they should, I guess. They clearly absolutely love him.
And another thing, and we have a blurb on this, is that the Rams seem very comfortable. Sean McVay seems comfortable establishing it. And they've really gone run heavy. Pat Corain has written about this for, I think, over a month now in his column, is that the Rams are way under, on pass rate over expectation is very low. They have a 52% pass rate over the past four games, which is among the lowest in the league. So I think they would want, you know, primarily for this offense to run through Cam Akers. Yeah, he's all the way back.
He's all the way back. And it's just so awesome for 2022 that, like, he's getting this taste now, because we're saying he's all the way back. He might not be all the way back still. I mean, he might be like 85-90%, but he's getting like something so rare where he's like getting this like small taste at the very end of the season. So like, he kind of knows where he still maybe isn't all the way back yet, but then gets, you know, the full 6-7 months in the off season, then to continue rehabbing, to continue getting back to 100% health. So he's kind of like getting to have his cake and eat it too, where he's getting like live reps, the most valuable thing you could possibly get for a returning player. But then he gets to go right back into like rehab and like strengthening mode. And like, he'll have a ton of confidence in 2022, which is, you know, huge when you're coming back from an ACL or an Achilles. Like, he'll have known, he's already tested it like the biggest games of the year. And this, like, we can have confidence just knowing that he's probably still not 100% of the way back, but he's already looking like this at what might be like 85-90%. And it's hard to not just be so, so excited for Cam Akers in 2022.
I mean, he's already the leading rusher for the Rams.
He is.
Like, he got 17 carries. And honestly, his 55 yards does not reflect.
No, I know. I know.
The night he had.
It doesn't.
You know, he was, and I know, you know, coulda, woulda, shouldas, holding penalties that brought back at least two long runs, maybe three, that the sideline target that almost went for a long touchdown. He was very close to having a 200-yard multiple touchdown game.
And it's kind of classic, where this, like, the old like cliche, it almost looked like he was playing like a different position than Sony Michel. Like, just so much more, like, running backs, you know, don't always just pop off the screen. We know it's the replaceable position, quote unquote. Like, Cam Akers runs like pop off the screen. Like, wow, like, this guy is just so powerful. And yet he just looked like a totally different level of runner than Sony Michel.
Yeah.
You know, we're excited, folks.
I do, yeah, and I'm so excited. I'll say this, and I do get overly excited. So reel me in if I need reeled in.
I'll reel you in.
I think that there will be a real argument for Cam Akers as the number one overall pick next year.
I mean, that'll be an argument that is made. It won't be an argument that I will take. Like, I don't think we should overthink Jonathan Taylor, who basically is like a special, special player, but, and also doesn't have, he still has way more tread on his tires than Derrick Henry. But yeah, people will make that argument. Maybe you will be one of them, Denny.
Perhaps.
People are going to make that argument. I actually do fully agree with that, because we know the lead back for Sean McVay can be a league winning position. So
yes,
we do know that. So that'll be part of the argument. Elsewhere around the league, we have Kirk Cousins trade chatter beginning in earnest with beat writer Chad Graff dot connecting his fit to the Steelers, Broncos, and Panthers. He's not actually reporting those teams, so I expressed initial interest in them, but it makes a lot of sense from a dot connecting perspective. Danny, what do we think the odds are that Cousins is back in Minnesota in 2022? It sure seems like they want a clean break with their recent past, with Mike Zimmer out, Spielman out, and seemingly Kirk Cousins maybe going to follow. He's under contract for one more year and $35 million.
Yeah. Chad Graff made the good point that if the Vikings can find a team to absorb the massive hit, which is 16 or 17% of the total projected salary cap for next year, they're only going to get a day three pick, and maybe two day three pick. So basically nothing, that doesn't seem likely. I would say more likely the Vikings are going to have to eat, as Chad Graff said, $20 to $25 million next year if they want to get rid of Cousins. I don't see them doing that. I think Cousins is back.
They could maybe do it. Maybe if they eat like a ton of the money, maybe they could actually get like a second or third round pick for him. I don't know. Like, we sometimes underestimate just how quarterback thirsty teams are. But how old? I mean, is he like 33 now?
33.
He's 33. Yeah, I mean, no one's going to want to be giving Kirk Cousins like a 2 or 3 year extension, I feel. I don't know, maybe they will. Teams are.
I think they will.
With quarterbacks.
To me, the Broncos are in such a good window as far as everything else goes. Pass catchers, running backs, offensive line, it all lines up. They're going to be so quarterback hungry that they could be the team that goes in on Cousins. I don't know if that's the right call. I'm not an NFL GM, as you know, but I do think that they would be the most likely to do that if they can't land, obviously, like an Aaron Rodgers or something.
I will say, so it was probably the best season, overall season of Kirk Cousins' career. He was very, very good. But all those teams that were mentioned, like the Broncos, the Steelers, the Panthers, it's really not that different of a situation that Kirk Cousins arrived to in Minnesota. Like, he was viewed, so 2017, they made the NFC Championship game with Case Keenum. Like, a roster that was, like, as close as it gets. Basically, the definition of a roster that was one player away, one piece away. If we could just get that quarterback, that final piece, we're going to be a Super Bowl-type roster. Obviously, this was Kirk Cousins, and that never happened. And I just wonder at this point if teams are going to be under any illusion like that Kirk Cousins is ever going to be like the one player type of player. Because we know that a long body of evidence that he doesn't seem to be. And it's a weird thing with Kirk Cousins. Maybe this is bad luck. But like a guy who – the results never seem to match the stats, do they? We're getting real into analytics here, Denny.
He's
such a strange player.
You're right. I saw a meme, a very funny meme. I think I retweeted it the other day where it said, the Vikings have gone 3 and out on 5 straight drives, but Cousins' Cousins' passer rating is over 90. And that's kind of the way it's gone in his time in Minnesota. But the issue for me with him leaving the Vikings is, what are the Vikings going to do at quarterback? They have nothing. Mike Zimmer hated Kellen Mond more than any coach hated any other player in history. So maybe they'll pretend that Mond is an answer. But when you have Justin Jefferson in his prime and Dalvin Cook probably in the waning years of his top tier NFL production, you have to have a legitimate quarterback, and they don't have one if they don't have Cousins.
They got to trade Cousins. They got to trade Justin Jefferson for the number one overall pick in the draft. Heard it here first, folks. Because the Vikings really should do a gut job. Like, their philosophy this year was, we'll let Mike Zimmer fix the defense because that's what he's good at. Right. Like, we're short on defensive talent, but Mike Zimmer has always figured this out in the past. He'll figure it out. He just didn't figure it out because they don't have enough bodies. Like, it's a roster that's just – it's at the end. It's at the end of the line for this group of players. But I agree that's not realistic. Teams do that a lot more often in baseball. They do it a lot more often in basketball. It's a lot harder to do in football, a 53-team player. Like, you don't ever just blow up the roster.
If I may, and the Vikings, if you're listening, you know, consider this: deal Dalvin Cook. Like, get what you can get for Dalvin Cook right now, because
absolutely,
you know, he's what, he has maybe 1-2 years left of being a viable top end running back. Some teams would love to have Dalvin Cook; they would love it, and you could get a lot for him. So consider it.
In fantasy, though, I thought Roto Underworld's Matt Kelly made an interesting point the other day. It's like, you'll be surprised at how little dynasty trade interest there is in Dalvin Cook, because people are on to Cincinnati basically already when it comes to Dalvin Cook. Like, whatever, he's old. Like, not going to trade for him.
It's true.
And yeah, the Vikings, they're in a just not good place. They're in not a good place. But I just look at the Steelers. Like, the Steelers would have been better with Kirk Cousins this year, but like, You wouldn't like look at the Steelers roster and think, oh yeah, they're going to the AFC Championship game with Kirk Cousins. He's got such bad mojo. I mean, I feel like he'll just never be rationally evaluated ever again, because he just oozes bad mojo.
It's
hard to be rational about Kirk Cousins. Like, you pull up his Pro Football Reference and it says really, really good, but it's impossible to be rational about him because he's so triggering.
He strikes me as the one guy that could get Mike Tomlin fired.
I know. It's so true.
The only guy.
That would be quite a career accomplishment for Kirk Cousins. But I tweeted recently, the way I feel about Kirk Cousins, like, people were shocked that I would compare Kirk Cousins to Tony Romo. Actually, very, very, very similar career outputs and statistics. Like, very similar. People were offended by that. But I feel like he's basically Tony Romo, except for none of his bad breaks were bad luck. They were like all self-inflicted. Like, yeah. Tony Romo was like a genuinely snake-bitten quarterback. It's kind of like the wrong place at the wrong time, I think. Like, he could have been a Super Bowl-winning quarterback. Kirk Cousins just seems like Mr. Shoot himself in the foot, basically.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I don't know what there's never going to be rational discourse on Kirk Cousins, because he's not a rat. He defies rationality. He's just a strange, strange entity as a football player. Denny, real quick, you got us in some hot Twitter water Tuesday morning when you passed along the Athletic's Mark Caboli's claim that all signs point to Mason Rudolph being the Steelers starting quarterback in 2022. I'd say color me skeptical, but you can't say there's a 0% chance of this happening. So, because as you said in the blurb, and as is obvious, everyone keeps claiming the quarterback class is bad. I'm sure by like mid-March, though, we're going to be like, oh, there's actually 3 or 4 first-round quarterbacks. Yeah. That's always how it works. The free agent market's awful as usual. The Steelers will be better positioned than some franchises to land a true franchise quarterback via trade if they want to. They're an organization I feel like quarterbacks will want to play for, like Russell Wilson would probably want to play for the Steelers. But what do you think the actual odds of Mason Rudolph being the Steelers quarterback in 2022 are?
This is the Steelers. This is the organization that promotes from within, that keeps
that is very true.
You know, they keep it in the family. They don't make splashy moves ever in the draft and free agency. Now, you know,
they signed Eric Ebron. Come on.
Right. They go, which was kind of shocking, but, you know, they go about their business and they signed, Rudolph to an extension, a 1-year extension that goes through 2022. They did that at the beginning of 2021. So that I would say that there's, you know, I would say, honestly, there's an over 50% chance that Mason Rudolph is under center in week one for them.
I'll take under on that. Maybe week one by the letter of the law. But I think he's priced to like the break glass in case of emergency option, where like if everything fails, they'll be comfortable, quote unquote, with him starting. But I think the Steelers will be kind of like the classic, like, bad draft class this year. They'll be one of the teams maybe willing to take the first round gamble. on someone who's not, first of all, like, the outgoing GM, Kevin Colbert, is going to do the draft. Like, he did that already with Ben Roethlisberger, Miami of Ohio in 2004. You know, like, had kind of, people were uncertain about Ben Roethlisberger because he played in the MAC. You never know what's going on. Like, Kevin Colbert maybe has faith in his ability to like identify a quarterback prospect like that. And they're the kind of team that really should, they're picking like 20th or 21st. They maybe should just take a gamble at quarterback. It's still a pretty decent overall roster, except for that offensive line. Yikes.
So one thing that Tomlin said that kind of went under the radar, and I think we should kind of keep this in the back of our minds this offseason. He had his end of season press conference on Tuesday, and he said that, quote, quarterback mobility is valued.
Yeah, you're right. I saw you highlight that in the blurb this morning. That was very interesting that did slip under the radar.
You know, Mason Rudolph is not that. Whatever he is, no. He is not a mobile. And don't get me wrong. Don't mistake, you know, just for the folks out there, don't mistake me thinking Mason Rudolph has a shot to start as advocating for Mason Rudolph. He's terrible. He's not good.
You think like, you should. That's fine.
He wouldn't get, I don't know. He would be benched within 3 weeks. So
that's true. That's
not what I'm saying.
The dude got benched for Duck Hodges, man.
Duck Hodges, who, you know, by the way, is selling insurance down the street for
Mason. He actually is a really good broker. I've loved working with him.
He's solid. He's solid. But okay. So would the Steelers trade for a mobile quarterback, or would they sign someone? Maybe Cam Newton will be out there. I don't know.
Yeah, man. I don't think they'll be going down the Cam Newton route. But it's sad. Like, I wanted Cam. I'm like, maybe his arm's a little bit healed this year.
His arm may be worse than Roethlisberger's.
You know, he's basically like Sandy Koufax at this point. Like, whatever happened in there is not solvable, not fixable. There's no surgery on earth that's going to bring back Cam Newton's shoulder, which is insane because Cam Newton's deep ball back in the day was like the deep ball in the NFL. So it's a shame. But you're talking about a mobile quarterback, by the way. Kirk Cousins, man, got to get him in there to Pittsburgh. They're going to want that Kirk Cousins mobility.
Could we possibly get, and this is conjecture and I have no basis for saying this, but it's pretty much the fantasy offseason. So Tyler Huntley to Pittsburgh. I'm just saying.
There's no way because the divisional aspect.
I know.
That is Tyler Huntley will be like a fascinating. I feel like the Ravens though just will hold on to him for dear life, even if they could get like a second round pick for him. That it just makes too much sense. He's just too valuable to them. He'd be more valuable almost than whoever they did. Even if Lamar Jackson bounces back and starts all 17 games next season, like I feel like they'll give that one more year with Tyler Huntley and then maybe trade him. But yeah. I just the way things went so haywire this year. Not that they're gonna like bench Lamar Jackson for performance. Just after all the injury issues this year at every level of their offense, I think they'll probably view Tyler Huntley as too valuable to trade. But probably. Yeah, it wouldn't be to Pittsburgh. Teams just don't do that. They just don't do that.
That was my one hang up with that thought process was like, are they really going to want to face, you know, the guy they traded to? But if this, I don't know, man, if the Steelers wanted to pay up for him, it'd be hard for an analytically driven team like the Ravens.
It's true. But yeah, it's not going to happen, Denny. Not going to happen, Dennis.
All right.
We'll be right back.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The NFL playoffs are here, and NBC Sports Edge Plus is giving you a special offer. Get 15% off an Edge Plus annual subscription throughout the playoffs when you use promo code PLAYOFF15. Get every tool for every game at one low price. It's easier than ever to play and wager with confidence when you have NBC Sports Edge Plus. We're on to the divisional round, and the NBC Sports Predictor app powered by PointsBet has you covered with Sunday Night 7, giving you a chance to win $1 million. Download today from your app store, or visit NBCSports.com/predictor for more information. Danny, all I have written here on the rubric, the syllabus, mm-hmm. the outline, whatever you want to call it, I just wrote Denny, all caps, Denny, 0RB. Okay. We talked about this on our Twitter spaces Monday with Lawrence Jackson and Kyle Dvorchik. It's kind of a stalemate, but none of us are 0RB. Legends, soothsayers, truth tellers like you are. where are we at with 0RB right now after 2021? You know, a year where Derrick Henry was hurt, Christian McCaffrey was hurt, but they like a little more stability than usual at running back. Where are we at with zero RB right now?
We're evaluating, and I intend to take a really very close look into how zero RB played out this season. I have some kind of initial findings here, and this is not the best way to judge a strategy overall, but I think it is a good way. This is a good way to zoom out and look at a certain approach to how to build a fantasy team. And that is what I've done here is to take the average draft positions of the top 12 wide receivers and top 12 running backs.
I've had a few of those moments today.
So wide receiver ones and RB ones and see, you know, see what that gives you. So if you add up the ADPs of all 12 receivers of the top 12 receivers in fantasy this season, you get an ADP of 62.2, which averages out to the second pick of the fifth round. That's the kind of the average ADP of a wide receiver one. Now, Hunter Renfrow had a major impact on that as the wide receiver 11 overall this season in PPR. We only talk about PPR, the only legitimate scoring format. And so Renfrow crushes the average. But I think one takeaway is that Davante Adams and Tyreek Hill were the only wide receiver ones drafted as such who delivered. That's it. That's the list. So that's the takeaway from receivers. Now, as far as running backs go, you add them up, you get an ADP of 47.7. That's the average ninth pick in the third round. So we're talking about like a late third rounder. Cordarrelle Patterson and James Conner crushed that average as Renfrow did with receivers. But here's the takeaway. 8 of 12 running backs who finished as RB1s were drafted as RB1s. So
it felt very, very stable at the top this year. Even though the very top, CMC and Derrick Henry got hurt. And even though Alvin Kamara was underachieved, Zeke underachieved, Saquon was bad. You had guys like Jonathan Taylor, Austin Eckler, Joe Mixon, Najee Harris, even Chubb, Dalvin Cook, kind of all largely performing in line with expectations. And it was kind of like a weirdly stable year. And something I was talking about anecdotally on our Twitter spaces Monday is that I feel like maybe, so just in general in the NFL, I think injuries have been declining kind of the past half decade. It kind of felt like, so I've been blurbing for RotoWorld NBC since 2011, and it felt like kind of like 2013 to 15, like injuries reached like a peak and like an absolute zenith in the NFL, where like there was just every week I do a Sunday recap com, and every week I just took it for granted there would be like some starting running back out for the season I could lead my column with and like talk about like, well, here's like the plug and play RB1 you're going to have. But I felt like, I guess maybe credit to the NFL, some of the initiatives to reduce injuries, I feel like maybe actually been working, and like especially running back, you know, the most injured position where by definition you're getting hit every time you have the ball. There's still a lot of running back. It seems like at least stuff like ACLs and stuff have really declined at running back. And I thought like the second half of this season. So now another thing you could just take for granted would like almost every week, like, all right, there's going to be like a top, at least an RB2 become available on the waiver wire this week. Someone will get hurt. I'll have Fab. I have a hole at running back. I'll be able to get an RB2 off the waiver wire this week. It seemed like the second half of this season, like, this like didn't happen. Like Elijah Mitchell was like the big splash earlier in the season. And then like maybe until like Rashad Penny, it seemed like it was such slim pickings on the waiver wire every week. And I just feel like maybe that could be kind of like an under the radar factor changing the calculus of zero RB, just that injuries have gone down. But this is purely anecdotal. I have no data to back this up. No, there's something I have been noticing with running back and zero RB.
I'd be interested to look into the injuries more. I do have to say though, and anybody who plays fantasy and played in the fantasy playoffs knows that the end of season running back point totals were far different, vastly different than the season long. And I'll just read some. So since from week 15 to 18, Rashad Penny was the RB1 overall and by a good margin.
That's this chalk. I mean, Devin knows that's going to happen.
Devin Singletary, the RB2. You have James Conner as RB8. I don't know if he counts though. Rex Burkhead was the RB9, naturally. Sony Michel, RB10. Deontay Foreman, RB11. You have Justin Jackson in there as a top 20. You have Darrell Williams. You have Duke Johnson as a top 20. So I will say that stashing running backs and looking ahead, getting Rashad Penny before his breakout, that was a season winner. I mean, it truly was. Like looking ahead and getting Justin Jackson for that big, that one big game he had against Houston, that was a huge help toward a championship. Deontay Foreman was not really in the discussion when the Titans signed Adrian Peterson after Derrick Henry's injury. Deontay Foreman was an afterthought. It was like, well, yeah, pick him up. Maybe if you need running back help, you pick him up. And folks did. And it really paid off down the stretch. So I do think there's an argument to be made for looking at running back depth charts and making an informed decision. Can this guy take over this backfield? And in a lot of those cases, yes, the answer was always yes, they could.
You just laid waste to my running back injuries thing. But it was weird. A lot of those were not like, it was kind of almost meeting in the middle of the 2 points we're making, because like there were injuries down the guys getting rested down the stretch, but not the ACL stuff was like definitely on the decline.
Yes.
It's been on the, and like, so it's weird, but yeah, by the end of the year, you are still, I guess you kind of highlighted, we're still getting into like MASH unit territory by the end of the year, I guess. And Rashad Penny literally winning leagues. I mean, come on.
Right. And you know, and this is something I want to do more research into, and I will. In the doldrums of the off season is being able to identify guys who have a path to, you know, volume, not league winning volume, but volume. A guy like Devin Singletary, who was so disappointing last year and for the first half of this season, always had a path, and his path was if the Bills phased out Zach Moss, or if Zach Moss got hurt, then it's Singletary's backfield. Like, he gets all the touches, and that happened. So and another thing, while we're on Singletary, Sean Siegel of RotoViz pointed out all season that Singletary's peripheral numbers, his yards before contact, his yards after contact, were elite.
He's always been so much better than Zach Moss. It never made any sense whatsoever.
We're almost off the charts. Yeah. So he actually Singletary proved himself to be like a legit NFL running back, starting running back, before he went off statistically, before the fantasy stuff happened. So paying attention to that stuff, can really, really strengthen your roster.
I drafted Devin Singletary for years, and I'll let you guess if I actually had him at the end of the season. The answer was no. I finally had given up the ghost. I'm like, they just don't like him. They think Zach Moss is good for some reason. So that was another anecdotal trend, a trend for which there actually is some data. I think part of those haywire late season numbers of running back wasn't so much because of injury. It was because of kind of like that mid season league wide shift to going more run heavy, and like cutting down, the Bills cut down in a committee, but like the Rams went more run heavy with Sony Michel. The Texans went absolutely crazy running the ball late in the year. Some of that was a little because of injury, but two, that also was like another trend to keep an eye on, where I think we've been kind of talking about all season. It seems like we've reached the peak of the passing explosion. Or maybe now on like the downslope, it's not like it's gonna crater or anything like that, but it does seem like the run rate league wide is probably gonna continue to go up, I think, for like another season or two. And the effects that will have on zero RB are gonna be fascinating.
Yeah, it's something I'm really looking forward to getting into. I don't know if you remember, but last off season, I had a crisis of faith with zero RB, and I actually wrote a pretty lengthy piece for the site, about, you know, recent seasons. Like, can you go, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth round wide receivers? Like, why can't this be viable? And I did kind of rebut that with talking to Sean Siegel and publishing a piece on eviscerating my own arguments, which is an interesting strategy by me. But I do think that there's a lot to parse and a lot to consider for, you know, 2022.
Yeah, things are changing. That's my final anecdotal point. Shocking, I'm going to make another anecdotal point. But is that ZRB is going to be affected by wide receiver too, because with the increased run rates, the declining passing, like we saw from teams like the Chiefs, you know, some of our best passing offenses, like the wide receiver depth for the first time in a long time felt depleted. But I always make the point, like, we've had several years where, like, there wasn't even much difference between, like, the wide receiver 20 and the wide receiver 36, and, like, in a good way. Like, it was just, there was just so much wide receiver 2-3 depth at receiver. By the end of 2021, that was not the case. Like, right. We were just, like, throwing darts a lot of time, like the 24 to 36 range. We're like, yeah, Jerry Jeudy, sure. Like, Rashad Bateman, I guess, was a wide receiver 3 this week. Like, the wide receiver depth was just decimated by the end of the season. And so, yeah, I just feel like there's maybe some tectonic forces going on with the way teams are playing offense right now that could shake up our approaches. Danny, I wasn't expecting these first few parts of the show to be so long before we got to this final segment bit. So we'll keep it quick, but just we're going to have a long preview on the divisional round on Thursday with you, me, John, and Matt. But let's just go game by game real quick. This is such a lame bit, but, like, who is the one X factor beginning for each game, beginning with Bengals Titans? Who's the X factor for Bengals Titans in the divisional round, Danny?
I think it's the aforementioned Deontay Foreman.
See, they can be obvious answers too. Like, they can be obvious. Deontay's not, I thought you were saying someone different, Danny. I thought you were saying a different Titans running back as the X factor for the divisional round.
Is Derrick Henry for sure?
It's not for sure, but I think it's been trending that way. So okay. The X factor is going to be who's going to be the
right. Titans. I mean, yeah. Well, yes, it would be whoever lines up in the backfield. And obviously Derrick Henry is one of the running backs who matter very much.
You've heard of Derrick Henry before.
In the NFL. I think, you know, the team did not change the way it operated when Henry was out. You know, they continued to lean heavily on the run pretty much in any game script, even when they fell behind. So they're ready and willing to just annihilate people on the ground if they can. And I think the Bengals can be annihilated on the ground. Josh Jacobs had a really nice game last week, and it could have been much bigger if the Raiders hadn't had to go pass heavy so much in the second half. So I think that the Bengals are a vulnerable team that can be run on.
Yeah, I think the Titans backfield will be like the position group X factor. And as we'll talk about on Thursday, I think something we kind of talk about every week with the Bengals is that they're the overall X factor for the game, that will the Bengals try to put the pedal to the metal and lean in to their truly special passing game talent, or will they give in to the temptation to, like, meet the Titans in the mud, basically? We talked about this on our Wildcat recap show. We're like, it's kind of hard to believe. The Bengals just seem like if you want to play that kind of game, they're going to gladly play it with you, and they need to resist that urge, and they need to open up their passing attack against the Titans.
Yeah.
49ers, Packers, Denny, can Jimmy Garoppolo stay out of the running game's way? Is my X factor for this game. What is your X factor for 49ers and Packers?
Yeah, I mean, it's Garoppolo. Like, you know, can he avoid the backbreaking mistake? Also,
he wanted to make the backbreaking mistake against the Cowboys.
He desperately tried.
He tried hard.
You have to give it to him. You know,
you do. Yeah, he tried. He left it all out on the field.
And he couldn't give it away. I go with Garoppolo here because Green Bay's pass defense has not been great. It hasn't been great. And Jair Alexander is probably, you know, is a game time call. Most likely Matt LaFleur said that he'll try to practice this week, which doesn't, you know, it doesn't bode well, I think, for his availability. I think the Packers secondary, I don't think the Packers secondary by all measurements has been exploitable. And if Jimmy G can, you know, can get to them a little bit and then let the Niners run game take over, I think it's a huge advantage for the Niners.
And the Packers can also be run on. They allowed almost 5 yards per carry, but teams never got to run on them because they were always playing from behind.
Yeah.
Like, they just couldn't run. So, like, if Jimmy can just avoid turnovers, maybe the 49ers can even play out. Maybe they won't even have to take advantage of the Packers' recent pass game deficiencies, and they can play the run-heavy offense they want if their quarterback just does not put them behind the eight ball.
Yeah, you mentioned, actually, yeah, I meant to highlight the Packers are also vulnerable against the run. Over the season's final 6 weeks, this is a 6-week sample. Only the Lions gave up a higher rushing EPA than the Packers. So they, yeah, wow. They can be had by a run heavy team. And the, have we ever seen Kyle Shanahan more emboldened than he is right now to just establish it?
No, yeah, it's true. He's won the argument right now. He is drunk with power. Yeah. Except for when it's like third down and they can like get a yard, then he like wants to throw for some reason.
Yeah, that is.
He's a strange guy. Rams, Bucks. Who is the one X factor? Only one, Denny. Who is the one X factor for Rams? Rams, Bucks.
It's Akers.
I was gonna say, I feel like it has to be Akers. I could also make the argument for Odell Beckham, because you know, the still like the best way to move the ball against the Bucks, even though the run defense is kind of more reputation right now. Like, can Odell Beckham like take these free yards that kind of exist opposite Cooper Kupp right now?
Yeah.
I think you're right. Cam Akers was basically like screaming like, I am the X factor on Monday night, like just making it blatantly obvious.
Yes. And I actually don't think it matters that Tampa's rush defense is strong. I think that the Rams are just hell bent on hiding Matthew Stafford a little bit, you know, making sure he doesn't make those horrific mistakes that we've seen this season, and getting Akers established.
And then finally, I think there's maybe kind of an obvious one for Bills Chiefs, but who is the X factor for Bills Chiefs?
Man,
you can say the line, by the way, if you want to.
The line?
Jared McKinnon.
Okay. Well, yes, we'll go with McKinnon. Why not? Look, has there been a running back in the Mahomes era that's looked as good as McKinnon did the
other night? No, they're actually – well, yeah, I mean, the Mahomes era. Didn't he play 1 year with Kareem Hunt? I mean, I think he did. Kareem Hunt probably did. Right. But post-Kareem Hunt, I mean, no. Yeah. Damian Williams kind of did in that playoff run, the Super Bowl winning run.
Sort of.
Yeah. I mean, but yeah, Jared McKinnon was the best anyone had looked since at least, let's say, Damian Williams in the playoffs that year. And yeah, man, what a wild, weird development.
Yes.
It almost looks like they have to feature him. Like, even if CEH is back, like, how could you feature CEH over what you saw from Jerick McKinnon in the wild?
Yes. How? I don't. And I'm actually terrified that the answer is that the Chiefs are going to say, well, CEH is back, so he's our guy.
Like, they probably are going to do that. It just seems like they're in it to the bitter end with that guy, I feel like. It is the playoffs. So the Bills, they didn't bitter end with Cole Beasley last week. They actually phased out Cole Beasley. Maybe the Chiefs will do something similar and they won't go to the bitter end with the player who just wasn't getting it done.
Yeah. The thing you notice about the KC backfield is that everybody is productive when they get a full workload, except for the one guy who they want to be productive.
Yeah, man. And boy, Darrell Williams was not, he didn't get a full workload Sunday night, but his one touch was a fumble and then he got disappeared. And that was rather sad in DFS, I might argue.
Rather sad.
We didn't really nail down the X factors there, but we have all day Thursday to do that.
Let's do it.
Get together with Matt, John, Denny, and I. We'll be breaking down the entire divisional round. Hope you liked our spin through today's news. Hope check out Denny's. Your wild card preview was excellent. That was really, really good stuff. Your divisional round preview going up Wednesday, Denny?
Wednesday evening. Yep.
Wednesday evening. Really, really good stuff. Please check that out. And please listen to us on Thursday. Stay with us on the site all week as we preview the second round of the playoffs and all the latest news, so on and so forth. I'm just going to keep talking and not end the show. No, the show's over. For Denny, I'm Pat. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you later.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.